Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, you! Come out here on the floor. Let's rock some more. Come out of here on the floor. Honey, let's rock some more, yeah. Now when you get out here, don't you have no fear. Put your hands on your hips and let your backbone lift and work out.
If you thought that James Brown was the hardest working man in show business, let me tell you something right there. You need the YouTube Jackie Wilson. James Bostic here, conservative perspective on Patriot Nation, on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. Because it's Monday, and that's what we do on Monday. Yesterday would have been Mojo 5-0 Radio, mojo50.com, but today it's Patriot Nation Radio. And it's good to be back here with you. Haven't done a whole lot of radio here in the last couple of months. Been some things going on. I'll recalibrate a little this and that. But we're here tonight. I am very happy to be here tonight. Got a great guest up. Actually, he needs no introduction, but he's going to make me give him one anyway. So here we go. My friend, and that is no joke, my friend Mike Cutler has been a 30-plus year veteran in the Immigration Naturalization Service as a federal agent. His areas of expertise included, but were by no means limited to, fraud, drug enforcement, organized crime, and counterterrorism, as all those things would apply within the bailiwick of the Immigration Naturalization Service. He is an outstanding radio man in his own right with the Michael Cutler Hour, 7 p.m. on Fridays, here at Blog Talk Radio, a much-in-demand speaker, a prolific contributor at Front Page Magazine. As a matter of fact, he's got a new article up dealing with the demise of Title 42. We'll get into that. A prototype of the first undercover black man for the federal government. He is also a great guy, my friend. And I'm going to prevail on him. I think I can squeeze enough friendship juice out of him. He'll tell us that story. Here he is, the one and only Mr. Michael Cutler. Mike, welcome back. Been a while, and I'm happy to have you here with us this evening.
Thank you, James. Yes, I do think I owe your audience an explanation for that last one. You know, I'm Jewish, and my background, unfortunately, there's bigotry in the world. It's tragic, it's sad, and it's affected almost every group of people you could imagine, every tribe, every religion, every ethnicity. We as human beings should know better. You know, life is a tough ordeal, and it's all too brief and all too fragile. And unfortunately, there are some cement heads out there that don't get it, and it's tragic. But, you know, I did a lot of work with Congress. And a number of years ago, the several leaders in the Republican side of the House asked me to sit in on a couple of hearings that were being held on the same day about immigration and border security. This was perhaps about 10 or 11 years ago. And by the way, I've also testified to Sheila Jackson Lee at two hearings. Sheila used to be right there with us. In fact, she participated in a hearing where she chastised President George W. Bush for not spending all the money Congress gave him to hire agents, to hire Border Patrol agents, to acquire detention spaces. And she basically said that what he was doing was dangerous and wrong, and she was absolutely right. Bush was no friend of border security. I mean, think back to the Border Patrol agents, Ramos and Compeon. Think about how he created DHS in a way that violated the Homeland Security Act. In fact, John Hostetler, the Republican chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, called Bush out at a number of hearings. And I remember one hearing where I also was testifying. I believe this was in May of 2005. And Hostetler said that the way DHS was put together violated the Homeland Security Act, which was the enabling legislation, ignored all the lessons that should have been learned about how immigration failures enabled terrorists to enter the country and attack us. And what Hostetler said was that what Bush did, what he created, well, he didn't say Bush specifically, but the Bush administration in creating DHS, gave us immigration incoherence and made it impossible to enforce our borders to secure our borders and enforce the immigration laws, thereby making it impossible to protect America and American citizens. And he was right on the money. Immigration was never supposed to be folded in with all these other agencies. They were never supposed to separate Customs and Border Protection from ICE. In fact, I had worked unofficially with Congress, and I came up with what I call the immigration enforcement tripod. The Border Patrol enforces immigration laws between ports of entry. Primarily, their job is interdiction. The inspectors at ports of entry, in those days it was immigration inspectors, now it's CBP, they enforce the laws at ports of entry. That's a job I did for the first 4 years of my career, so I'm intimately familiar with all these jobs. And then the special agents have always been ignored because their mission is interior enforcement. We only have a couple thousand ICE agents to this very day. And all we're hearing, by the way, from the Republicans is we need to hire more Border Patrol agents, not IRS agents. Well, I agree, we don't need the IRS agents, but goodness gracious. Border Patrol agents have a very narrow focus. Once aliens get past the border, whether it's by running the border, by stowing away on a ship and making their way to land, or entering through an international airport and then disappearing into the night once they're admitted, never to be seen again, Border Patrol has zero to do with that. When aliens commit immigration fraud, and immigration fraud was identified by the 9/11 Commission as the key method of entry and embedding for the terrorists, the Border Patrol play absolutely zero role in conducting investigations into fraud. That's, again, the job of ICE agents. I know I did that job. In fact, as a brand new agent, I hate to tell you, back in 1976, a long time ago, my very first fraud investigation caused me to trip over a terror plot in Israel, and we were subsequently and very fortunately able to prevent the bombing of an oil refinery working with the Israeli National Police and the FBI. Border Patrol has no stake in that whatsoever. Also, it's about going after the crooked employers and the crooked lawyers who engage themselves with the aliens so that they can get employment, they can get immigration benefits to which they're not entitled. Again, not the mission of the Border Patrol, but the mission of ICE. And it's ICE agents that participate in the Joint Terrorism Task Force the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force, and that in that task force, I spent the final 10 years of my 30-year career. So the real issue here is a lack of interior enforcement, and this has been going on for decades, and it's going on for decades because both parties are playing the same game on the American people. It's an immigration con game. That's why they're telling us, just go after the southern border when we have, you know, 100,000 miles of border. They want you to focus on just 2,000 miles. Don't get me wrong. The Mexican border is a nightmare. It's a disaster. It keeps me awake at night. We know Hezbollah is working throughout Latin America with human traffickers and drug smugglers to move people and drugs into the United States, including sleeper agents. But they're coming in across the northern border. We're going to get into all these other aspects. But I kind of took a detour because I had worked very closely with Congress after 9/11. I did a whole bunch of hearings. I think I was up to 17 hearings in the House and Senate. And frequently I was on the phone with the staffers and members of Congress and doing closed-door sessions because we knew that immigration was the key issue and we wanted to do everything possible to keep from getting hit once again. So when I got a call from several leaders on the Republican side and they said to me, Mike, are you willing to come down to D.C.? It'll be a change of pace. You won't be testifying. You'll be sitting in the audience. But we need you to take notes, and we need you to evaluate the testimony of the witnesses, especially the witness that's being put up there by the Democrat Party. And I said, fine. You know, whatever you need me to do, I'll carry the water. I don't want America to be hit. I lived through 9/11. My neighbors died. The ashes landed on my house. I don't want to experience that again. I'll be honest. Anybody who was in New York back then is still suffering post-traumatic stress, myself included. I remember for months, any airplane that flew overhead had everybody staring up at the sky and stopping in their tracks thinking, oh my gosh, what's going on? It's that serious. And this threat has not gone away, and it's only gotten worse because of what happened in Afghanistan because of the Biden administration and so forth. But when Congress and the leaders there said to me, we need your help, my answer was always absolutely when and where. So during the recess in the hearing, Sheila Jackson Lee spotted me in the audience. Again, I had worked with Sheila on a couple of hearings. She came up to me and said, Mr. Cutler, I'd love to introduce you to Congressman John Lewis. He's a major figure in the civil rights movement, and certainly he's an historic figure. And I was very honored and flattered that she wanted him to meet me, and he wanted to meet me. And so we started chatting. And it turned out that I had known James Meredith, the first black man to go to Mississippi University, from other circumstances, and it turns out he's a good friend of his. So we started to have this really very cordial conversation. And I commended him for all the work that he did to combat discrimination, racism, bigotry, and all the ills that go with it. I'm a very strong supporter of civil rights. Without civil rights, you cannot have a democratic republic. You cannot have freedom. That's not the America I want to live in. Civil rights are critical for everybody, irrespective of what I call superficial factors, race, religion, or ethnicity. It's about all people not only being created equal, but being treated equally, especially in the eyes of the law, okay? And when I started to discuss that with the Congressman Lewis, his focus was on slavery and on black civil rights and so forth. And I said, you know, you need to realize that slavery isn't new. It didn't start in the United States. I said, I'm Jewish, and in fact, the Jewish people were enslaved going back to the days of the Bible. And I said to him, think about something. The bigots who don't like blacks probably don't like Jews, and God knows who else they don't like. I said, the KKK probably fears me more than they fear you, Congressman. And he said, Mr. Cutler, why would that be the case? I said, well, you're obviously a black man. I'm a white guy, but I'm a Jew, and they hate Jews. So to the KKK, I'm no different from an undercover black man. And long story to get to the punchline, but I will tell you that Sheila Jackson Lee and John Lewis doubled over laughing. They couldn't catch their breath. That's how hard they laughed. And that brings me to a point that I want to make to all of you in talking with our neighbors and talking with politicians and talking with anybody and everybody. I have a degree in communications, arts, and sciences. I like to call it my BA in BS. The most effective weapon we have is humor. Is humor. Because that's how you break down barriers. That's how you get people to listen to you. That's how you make things interesting. That's how we avoid this appearance of being mean-spirited. I was enraged, for example, when Alan Greenspan testified for Chuck Schumer before the Senate Immigration Subcommittee, which at the time Schumer chaired. And Greenspan, this was April 30th, 2009. I remember that hearing like yesterday. I watched it live streaming on my computer. And Greenspan addressed immigration and the need for comprehensive immigration reform. And we'll talk about that a little bit tonight also. The great thing about your show is how much time you give me. But Greenspan said that the solution to wage inequality in America between Americans with skills and those with lesser skills, and by skills we're talking now about Americans who have advanced degrees, Americans who are computer programmers and scientists and engineers. And he said they're making too much money, believe it or not. And he said if we could make those high-tech American workers compete with foreign workers through competition, we could drive down that wage premium that they are earning. And once you do that, you greatly reduce inequality in wages between Americans with skills and those with lesser skills. And my blood was boiling. He actually had, as you say in Brooklyn, Greenspan did, had the chutzpah to refer to high-tech American middle-class workers as the privileged elite. I thought the top of my head was going to lift off when I heard it. The next day I was on a radio program, and I was a regular on this woman's program. And I had told her before I went on the air that I had watched the entire hearing, and I recommended that everybody watch it because the video was still available on the Internet. And she said to me, Mike, when you watched Greenspan testify, what did you think? I said, well, besides being angry beyond words, I realized I was witnessing the first. And she said, Mike, I know you well enough to know that I'm standing on thin ice when I ask you what kind of a first was it, but what kind of a first was it? And I said to her, it was the first time I'd ever seen someone testify who was suffering from rigor mortis. Now, she told me she spent the rest of her program mopping up her mascara from laughing so hard. But the reason I tell you that story, one of the problems that I had with Donald Trump and the wars that he had with the journalists, so-called journalists, and his political opponents, it was constantly a wrestling match. It got exhausting after a while. And they did come after him, and they were unfair. And the Durham report certainly underscores that and verified what happened. But goodness gracious, the whole idea is that you want people to pay attention to your message. I remember John F. Kennedy, who was known for his wit. In fact, there was a book that was published while he was the president, and I'm old enough to remember this, who was called The Kennedy Humor, to give you an example. I remember, and this made headlines around the world. I believe that this young boy, 12, 13 years old, was visiting the White House, doing the White House tour. I think those were the circumstances, unless the president was on the road and meeting people. Again, I'm not exactly sure of the circumstances that led to their encounter. But the president, President John F. Kennedy, wound up having this conversation with this young boy. And with his bad back and all, he got down on one knee so that he was eye level with this little boy, which was really important. Make eye contact. Be at that person's level, right? And the kid asked him, the president said, do you have any questions you want to ask me? And this young man said to him, Mr. President, how did you become a war hero? And those of you familiar with Kennedy know about the PT-109 and how he saved his crew, et cetera, et cetera. He was a true war hero during the Second World War. And instead of bombast and talking about how brave and strong and incredible he was, he very quietly looked at the little boy and he said, son, it was purely involuntary. They sank my boat. And that self-effacing humor was what endeared Kennedy not only to Americans but to people around the world. When we have conversations with our neighbors, we're not doing any favors by engaging in name-calling. I hate the term libertards. Every time I hear it, I want to scream. First of all, let's be perfectly clear. I am a liberal. My parents raised me to be a liberal, and I'm proud of it. I raised my children to be liberals. Before you have a meltdown, today's Democrat Party is not liberal.
Oh, absolutely not.
Celebrate the First Amendment, okay? It's sacrosanct. You do not violate the First Amendment. My parents raised me to believe that everybody, and I mean everybody, is entitled to their own thoughts and their own opinions, and they should have an absolute right, and the First Amendment says they do, to express their thoughts even when we completely disagree with each other. That's what makes America, America. The only exception, of course, is the traditional thing about don't cry fire in the crowded theater and don't call for violence. But other than that, and in fact, I want to know what people are really thinking because that tells us who they are. If some guy is a jackass, the best way to know he's a jackass is to give him enough rope so that he hangs himself or herself, right? So when the Democrats are labeled as being liberal, I go crazy. They're not liberal. They're authoritarian. They are fascists. They are dictatorial. They are totalitarians. They don't want you to have any freedom, no freedom of expression, no freedom to defend yourself. They want to strip, I believe, Americans of all of their freedoms. I believe that they are closing in on the First Amendment to cancel culture and all that other nonsense. And if you sit down and talk to your neighbors and explain that to them, think how much further the conversation will go. Think about how much more reasonable and rational the conversation that follows will be. They're not liberal, okay? Let's get over it. And it's so important because there are Americans who are liberals, like me, old-time liberals. And when they hear that the Democrats are supposedly liberal, some people are not sophisticated enough or not paying attention enough to realize that, number one, they're not liberals, and number two, the Democrats aren't their friends. They hear the word liberal, they say, well, I'm a liberal. I guess they're the people that I should be hanging out with. They're the people I should be relating to. The Democrats are anything but liberal. I think it's an important point. Have conversations, not fights. At the end of the conversation, leave your neighbor, your relative, your coworker, whoever you're having the conversation, leave them with a question. Questions are incredible tools. Questions don't go away. If you end the conversation by lambasting somebody about your viewpoint, they're going to walk away and say, what a blowhard. Oh, my God, I couldn't get away from him fast enough. But if you ask a question, and I did this on one of my appearances at Fox and Friends First, I asked the host of that morning program, because we were talking about this massive flood of illegal aliens, this was a couple of years ago before it got really crazy, I asked them, would you get on an airplane if you saw the people that were getting on your plane sneak past TSA? And the young lady on the show gasped, and she said, oh, my God, are you kidding? Of course I wouldn't get on the airplane. And the guy that was with her, I forget his name now, I think it was Rob, said, Mr. Cutler, of course not. Who would get on an airplane if they saw people sneaking past the screening process? I said, well, think about this. We are now living among tens of millions of aliens who have no inherent right to be here. They all snuck past the similar vetting process that we conducted ports of entry for the very same purpose, to keep people out who pose a threat to public health, public safety, and national security. How in the world is it reasonable to tell Americans that you're dead wrong if you take issue with living among foreign nationals who evaded the vetting process that's required by law and is designed to keep us alive? Ask that question to anybody who wants to have a conversation about immigration. Think how that's going to change the dynamic of their understanding of the issue. What do you think of that, James?
Something's going to have to give. And you know what? I think you can get further in the neighborhood, just so, you know, with a beer and a hot dog with your neighbor than you can with competing candidate signs. I think you're right. And you know, that is the bond, that communal bond there with our neighbors, with the guy that works at the mower store or whatever. You know, those are the things that we have to strengthen. Those are the things we have to cultivate and maintain, that level of fellowship amongst our neighbors, our coworkers.
It's part of good parenting. If you're concerned about your children's future, if you're concerned about the future of your grandchildren or your nieces or nephews or whomever, this is what we're really talking about. What world are they going to inherit from us? We're certainly on the wrong track and going down quickly, and it's got to stop. And again, these aren't left-right issues. John F. Kennedy was a Democrat. He was a war hero. He didn't say defund the police. He had a great relationship, in fact, with the Secret Service. I know I met some agents who had protected him when I became an agent. They were the guys on their way out the door, and I was first coming in as a new INS agent, and we worked with all these other agencies. So So understand that we've got to stop focusing on party and start to focus on individual candidates. You have politicians on both sides of the aisle. We need comprehensive reform. When can we get to it? And I almost get the feeling that Mayorkas is setting us up so that we're going to be so angry, and they're flooding the cities. The cities are having a meltdown, and he keeps saying Congress needs to work with us. And you have these journalists, so-called, from both perspectives, saying breathlessly, that's right, why can't Washington work together and create comprehensive immigration reform? What's wrong with these people? And they're trying to convince the American people that the outrageous is reasonable and fair. Think about that. Under comprehensive immigration reform, because the argument is we can't arrest them all anyway, and I've been hearing this forever. I testified at a bunch of hearings about it. In fact, I wrote an op-ed for the Washington Times in 2006, and Jeff Sessions quoted me from the floor of the Senate on three separate days with attribution, and then sent me a certificate commemorating it. Because I wrote an op-ed where I compared the hearings where I testified and others testified about comprehensive reform with the countdown for the launch of Space Shuttle Challenger. The article for the Washington Times was called Immigration Bill a No-Go. And I said that the purpose for the countdown was for the engineers and other experts at NASA to decide whether or not they should go forward with the launch. And we all know what happened on that cold January morning in 1986 when catastrophe struck. They launched against the advice of some of their best experts. And we, 73 seconds after liftoff, we lost seven valiant astronauts and a national treasure, Space Shuttle Columbia. The Space Shuttle Challenger, Columbia came later. And so I said the purpose for the hearings was for the experts to weigh in as to whether they should go forward with that legislation. And so the argument that we heard was you can't arrest them all, at least now they'll all be legal, which is one of the most outrageous arguments. But that was the trick that the Nazis used. You tell a lie, you repeat it 10 times a day, and pretty soon lies and really crazy thinking becomes accepted as, oh, okay, that must be okay. I heard it how many times from how many people because they say and I've heard. So when people ask me about it, you know, I'm Jewish, and Jews answer a question with another question. It's just it's baked into our DNA. What can I tell you?
So which I think should be the name of your book.
Say that again?
I think they would... I haven't had a chance to talk to you about this. I have an idea for you writing a book, and I was thinking about it today, and I think that's what the name of it should be.
What's that?
I'm going to answer a question with another question. I was thinking about it today, and I said it's either going to be that or how's that for an answer. One of those two is going to make the title for your next book.
I love it. I'm going to have to give that some thought. So when people say to me, well, you can't arrest them, back then they kept saying 11 million. They're still saying 11 million. This is insanity. What do you do with the 11 million you can't arrest? And I said, okay, what do the cops do with the drunk drivers they don't arrest? What do the cops do with the guys that knock over convenience stores and they can't find them? What do they do about them? I said, the trick is you arrest as many law violators as you can. You publicize those arrests. You make certain that they face significant and serious consequences so that on that day they're not having a good day. And you make it clear that if the flying fickle finger of fate lands on your square, you're not going to be a happy camper. To say to people around the world, since we can't arrest all of you, we're just going to give everybody a pass to citizenship is nuts. You're firing the starter pistol for aspiring illegal aliens from all over the world. And for them, the finish line is the border of the United States. But it gets worse. Think of this. And, you know, again, the talking heads on TV, they pontificate as though they know what they're talking about. Half the time they don't, maybe three quarters of the time. Well, if these immigrants, quote unquote, have been living here for the last 7 years and they've committed no crime, absolutely we should take care of them. Well, the law says if you've been here for more than 10 years and you have no criminal convictions and an American citizen or a lawful immigrant immediate family member would suffer if that alien was deported, then we can terminate deportation proceedings for that alien. So that's in the law. But it requires an in-depth field investigation where an agent goes out, knocks on doors, questions people to begin to, first of all, figure out who the person truly is. We don't know who they are. They call them undocumented. What does that mean? You know, you can't tell a good guy from a bad guy without a scorecard. So that's job one. Job two is to figure out how long they've been living here. So now think about that. They're saying, well, they've been living here for 7 years, 8 years, 10 years. Pick a number. Okay. How do you know how long they've been living here? You have no ability to interview them or do a field investigation. Aliens who run the border do not create a record of entry. What does that mean? It means that an alien who enters the United States 3 weeks from tomorrow will be able to fill out an application and lie. That's what immigration fraud is, a lie on the paperwork, and claim that they were here since 2003. The burden of proof is going to be on the adjudicator, not the alien, because the adjudicator has to say, no, we know that you came in a week ago because here's the evidence. If you don't have the evidence, the judge will look at the case and say, well, how do you know that the person's lying? If you can't prove they're lying, then you have to presume what? That they're telling the truth. I know how that works because I spent a year as an adjudicator doing the marriage interviews. So every alien will know that they've got to say that they entered prior to whatever the magic date is. If let's say they say any alien who entered the United States, you know, prior to, I don't know, 2020, January the 1st. So everyone's going to be coming in claiming that they came in March of 2018. How do you disprove it? The answer is you can't. So we don't know who they are. We don't know when they entered, right? Now, why didn't they come in legally? Now, that's a good question, right? Why did the chicken cross the road to get to the other side? Why did the alien enter illegally? Because the alien knew that he or she could not enter legally. Now, why? Well, if you go to Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, it lists all the categories of aliens who are to be kept out of the United States, excludable aliens. And there's nothing in there about race or religion or ethnicity. Let's get rid of that lie and that nonsense. And let me tell you, if that was an element, I couldn't have done the job for 30 seconds, let alone 30 years. This isn't about race, religion, or ethnicity. It begins with aliens who have dangerous communicable diseases, which is the point about Ellis Island having been a quarantine station, and it brings us back to COVID, and ultimately it will get us to Title 42. Aliens who are mentally ill, aliens who are criminals, terrorists, spies, human rights violators, war criminals, fugitives from justice, human traffickers, drug smugglers. Any of those groups appeal to anybody? Okay. Aliens who would become a public charge because they don't have the wherewithal to support themselves, or aliens who plan to work illegally and in so doing will displace American workers and drive down the wages of Americans who are similarly employed. That's what's in the law. The law is about defending American lives and the jobs and wages of American workers, period. How in the world is it wrong to enforce laws that have that as the goal? The fact that Americans could be convinced that this is somehow evil is right up there with Americans who now don't know how many sexes there are and whether or not the person's sex is fixed or fluid. I'm a pretty liberal guy, and I really don't care what gay folks do or don't do. I don't care what any consenting adults do in private. Life is a tough proposition, and whatever gives you joy, as long as you're not hurting anybody and it doesn't involve children, I'm all in. Not my cup of coffee, okay? But I understand that other people, different strokes for different folks, literally, and I'm cool with that. But the idea that we're now convincing parents to give sex change hormones and surgery to their children because the kid might not really be a boy even though he has the appropriate genitalia. Boy, when P.T. Barnum said there was a sucker born every minute, he was wrong. It seems like there's a sucker born every tenth of a second. So we've been intimidated, we've been bullied, we've been cowed into believing all kinds of insanity, and we're afraid to speak up. And I'm going to tell you, the failure to speak is deadly. I grew up in Brooklyn. If we had a problem, we straightened it out after school in the schoolyard. The bullies beat the crap out of me until my dad sent me off to work out in the gym, put on some muscle, learn how to box, and learn how to defend myself. And still people say to me, aren't you afraid that people will call you a bigot or a racist or a xenophobe? I said, I don't care what they call me. They could call me Mike. That's my name. But that other garbage, I know who I am and I know what motivates me. And we're told that it's anti-immigrant to enforce the immigration laws. So let's think about what happened just a couple of weeks ago in Texas when an illegal Mexican alien, and that is the term alien, defined by law as any person who is not a citizen or national of the United States. There's no insult in that term, folks. It's clarity. And when you're a con artist, a schemer, and a liar, then the last thing you want is clarity and truth. They hide behind obfuscating language. Read 1984. You'll understand it completely. So this Mexican who had been deported on four separate prior occasions, which, by the way, is a felony, and I had worked with Senator Al D'Amato back in the early 80s to make such a felony by criminal aliens carry a penalty of up to 20 years in jail. You know, they tell you, oh, immigration law is like jaywalking. Well, that's the administrative side. Administratively, you look to deport aliens, remove them. But criminally, it's like any other crime. If you commit visa fraud in support of terrorism, it carries a 25-year jail sentence. Don't tell me it's like jaywalking, right? Think about that. So it's a lot of lies, a lot of misinformation. So this guy, who should not have been wandering around America, was, notwithstanding four prior deportations, and he gets drunk, takes an AK-47 or whatever he was firing off, and started shooting in his backyard. The neighbors came out and said, gee, it's kind of late. Our baby's asleep. Could you please not do that? I mean, what an outrageous request, right? Please stop firing your gun into the air. You're waking up our little baby. And what does this guy do? He grabs his gun, charges into their house, and kills five of these people, who, by the way, were citizens of Honduras, which goes back to a point that I keep making. The most likely victims of criminal aliens are members of the ethnic immigrant community that most closely resembles the criminal. And it's not just Latin America. So let's be clear. It's not about brown skin. As an immigration agent, I've arrested criminal Israelis who were here. As I mentioned, I had worked with the Israelis to, and we wound up preventing a bombing in Israel. From that day forward, I worked closely with them. If they had a fugitive in the United States, they'd call me up and my partner and I would go out and arrest them. And it's funny because a bunch of these guys would accuse us of being anti-Semitic. And my partner and I were both Jewish, okay? But we're anti-Semitic and we're nasty and miserable people because we're arresting people. In fact, one of the people that I arrested and sent home to Israel was wanted for murder in Israel. He had killed a Palestinian prostitute. He was found guilty and sentenced to a lengthy jail sentence. I got an award from the government of Japan for helping send a Japanese woman home who had been part of a major cocaine smuggling ring that was smuggling cocaine from the United States to Japan. I worked with New Scotland Yard. I arrested an IRA terrorist, took a gun off him. None of these people are Latino. Okay, the IRA guy, in fact, was defended by Barry Scheck. Those of you, I'm sure, have heard of him. He was quite a high-profile lawyer, and he's obviously a white guy. He was Irish. Japanese people are not Latino. Israelis are not Latino. You follow the point. This is about getting people off the street and taking them into custody because they pose a threat, period, full stop. So you keep hearing all this nonsense. I was the Marine Intelligence Officer in New York. We used to do ship searches. I went out with the Coast Guard, did ship boardings looking for contraband and stowaways. And the people in the Greek community, because lots of these ships had Greek seamen on board, oh, immigration agents hate the Greeks. You know, we're always getting this race nonsense. No, what I hate are people who violate our laws. Very simple. People who violate the law are subject to legal action, the oath that I took. And unlike our politicians, law enforcement officers and members of the armed forces tend to take their oaths of office quite seriously. So we hear all this nonsense, and you have Biden doing what he's doing, and you have Mayorkas running around saying, well, if Congress would only work with us. Yes, to do what? Legalize, what, 40 or 50 million illegal aliens with no interviews, no field investigations. And by the way, and this is the kicker that nobody talks about, if you legalize, let's say, 30 million aliens, guess how many aliens wind up getting legal status? Now, the average person would say, well, 30 million. But you'd be dead wrong. Because once you give lawful status to an illegal alien, that alien has an absolute ironclad, bulletproof right to bring in immediately all of his minor children and his or her spouse. And I assure you that Biden won't be doing DNA testing. So let's say if on average each of the 30 million have four minor children in their home country, You do the math. You're looking at an influx of aliens from every corner of the planet, including countries that are not our friends, that are our adversaries. We could have an influx of 120 million, school-age children. By law, they must immediately be enrolled in school. Does anybody have an idea about how to educate 120 million students who can't speak English? Just stop and let that sink in. Just here's a question. I want you to think about the question. If we are stupid and corrupt enough to enact comprehensive reform, then let's be optimistic. It's not 120 million. It's only 100 million. Okay, I exaggerated maybe. Or maybe it's 200 million. We have no clue. So let's settle on 100 million. Can anyone tell me what the plan is to provide education for 100 million children? The Congressional Budget Office did a study in 2006 or 2007, and they estimated that it costs 20 to 40% more to educate kids who can't speak, read, or write English. Even if everyone speaks the King's English, as they used to say, you're still talking about 100 million students who immediately need to have teachers and classrooms and labs and computers and desks. Where are we going to educate them? Where are we going to get enough teachers to educate 100 million children? Why is the Republican Party not mentioning it? I'll tell you why. Because they want this to happen. Because they are bought and paid for by the Chamber of Commerce and these other globalist organizations that don't give a rat's tail about America or Americans. I'm not anti-immigrant. I am rational. The United States each year admits more than a million lawful immigrants, and that's more than the rest of the world combined, a million. They are immediately placed on the pathway to United States citizenship. We also admit tens of millions of temporary visitors, foreign students and business people and tourists and journalists and religious leaders and diplomats, tens of millions. We are very liberal. We have the most liberal immigration policies of any first world country. Right? We're very welcoming. Very naive too, unfortunately. So think about that. So it's not like we're not letting in anybody. The problem is how many can we let in? So now let's look at the environment, because you know the Democrats are very strong on the environment. I know that they shake in their boots thinking about damaging the environment. I mean, John Kerry, I mean, he gets in that airplane and I'm sure he feels sick to his stomach as he's cruising at 40,000 feet in his private jet spewing pollution. But he tells you better walk, don't even drive, right? The hypocrisy is off the charts. But now think about this. We have a water problem. And yes, there have been some floods in California, so that's been temporarily solved. You know, Chicken Little, the sky is falling, just like climate change. Things tend to reverse themselves. Everything is in flux. sex is determined, but they want you to believe it's fluid. No, the environment is what's really fluid. Things keep on changing. The more they stay the same, the more they change. But here's the point. We know long-term we have a water crisis. Okay, riverbeds have been exposed in some parts of the country out west. Every person who is in the United States on average requires 100 gallons of water per day, according to studies that I've read. Biden let in 5 million, supposedly. I think the numbers are higher. But let's go with 5 million. 5 million people who have no right to be here are consuming 100 gallons of water each and every day, 7 days a week. What does that mean? Every day, because of Biden's immigration policies, 500 million gallons of water are being consumed at a time when the Biden administration is telling us that dishwashers should not use more than 3.2 gallons of water. Let it sink in. Let it sink in. They want us to have electric cars that the power grid is not able to handle it, I promise you. Guess what? Every person who comes into the United States, no matter how they come here, requires what? Electricity. They also require transportation. They require health care. They require food and clothing. They require housing. And because they require housing, the price of housing has gone through the roof. I'm living in the house my parents bought when I was 11 years old. It gives me comfort to be living in the same house. My office is actually in what used to be my bedroom, and that's where I'm sitting right now, and a couple of my kids actually slept in this room, okay? So it's nice to have that kind of continuity. My father is a construction worker, needed about 3 years' worth of his annual pay to buy this house. Because of everything that's happened to real estate in places like New York, even with all the crazy stuff going on, this house now requires roughly 10 to 12 years' worth of annual pay of a construction tradesman, putting housing out of the reach of the average family. How is this in the best interest of the average American? And that's the question nobody ever asked the politicians. How are your policies good for me and my family as an American? Abraham Lincoln envisioned America as possessing a government that was of the people, by the people, and for the people. And he was right, but unfortunately, it's the people that write the checks. Because now our politicians are being paid for by the lobbyists. If you don't like lobbyists, realize that the politicians, most of them, are the employees of the lobbyists, because the lobbyists write the check, the politicians and the political parties deposit the checks, creating what I call an employer-employee relationship. When you have a boss, you either make your boss happy or you look for a new job. If the politicians don't make the bribers, did I say bribers? I always get the language confused. The campaign contributors, if they don't satisfy their campaign contributors, the money will stop and they won't be able to win the next election. Now, when the Supreme Court decided Citizens United, which meant that unlimited amounts of money could be pumped into political campaigns, everything changed. Everything. I was averaging 30 television interviews per month back then. As soon as that changed, the interviews stopped. TV stopped covering immigration the way they did. The push was on for globalism, to eradicate our borders, to eradicate our immigration laws, and leave America vulnerable to such wonderful countries, China, Russia, Iran, North Korea. A country's borders are its first and last line of defense. In point of fact, the 9/11 Commission, to which I provided testimony, it also issued another report besides the 9/11 Commission report. And the report that they issued was called the 9/11 Commission Staff Report on Terrorist Travel. And this was the report that was prepared by the federal agents and the government lawyers who were assigned to work with the 9/11 Commission. So this 9/11 Commission Staff Report on Terrorist Travel, the preface began with this paragraph, or these couple of sentences anyway. It is perhaps obvious to state that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they're unable to enter the country. Yet prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. I have to interrupt. Just ask the question, what yo-yos did they hire who couldn't figure out that border security is to be equated with national security, but maybe it's me. Anyway, this paragraph goes on and says the following. Indeed, even after 19 hijackings demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa and gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy. We believe, for reasons we discuss in the following pages, that it must be made one. Well, they're not even talking about the Mexican border here. They're talking about the visa process. The first time I testified before Congress was 4.5 years before the attacks of 9/11. It was May 20th, 97. And the topic was immigration fraud and visa fraud because of two terror attacks carried out in the United States in 93. The shooting by Kansi, a Pakistani national who had applied for political asylum, killed two CIA officers, wounded three others, fled the country. He was brought back, found guilty at trial, and then subsequently executed, but it didn't bring the dead back to life. February 93, we had the first World Trade Center bombing that killed six, injured over 1,000, and inflicted $500 million in damage. And according to the engineers who did the investigation, they almost knocked the tower down sideways. And had that happened, we could have had a couple of 100,000 dead bodies. Okay? But all we're told is keep watching the southern border. I've written about this for Front Page Magazine. Just watch the southern border. And what's really interesting about that is that on April 28th, just about 2 weeks ago, the Justice Department issued a press release, and it was called the Joint Statement from the 2023 U.S.-Canada Cross-Border Crime Forum, and the subtitle, this forum focused on fentanyl, opioids, firearm violence, anti-money laundering, virtual currency, human smuggling, sex offender travel, and criminal justice reform on the northern border. to turn on Fox or any other so-called conservative network, with the exception of Newsmax, to their credit, they have me on and they give me the freedom to raise the issues. But all they say is crisis on the southern border. You know, there is a crisis on the southern border, but you don't think there's a crisis on the northern border? Remember I told you we admit tens of millions of temporary visitors through international airports. The 9/11 Commission said that most of the terrorists back then came through international airports. Is anybody discussing the way that we're admitting people through international airports today? Absolutely not. What are we supposed to be focused on? The southern border. Why are we ignoring all the other means of getting into the country? You know, James, a couple of weeks ago, I spoke at an event in New Jersey, and I asked the people when I started out speaking if it mattered to them how my son and I, because my youngest son decided to go with me, we're super close. In fact, just 2 days ago, he bought me track time in New Jersey. It's the second time we've done this. I drove a Corvette on the racetrack last year. We did Ferraris. And he likes to accompany me, and he's an engineer, and he's my youngest, and he still lives home. He has his own apartment downstairs. So he came with me, and I asked the people, because they've known him for many years. I've been speaking to this group since shortly after 9/11, so we're talking almost 20 years. And I asked them, does it matter what route we followed to get to the meeting? I said, does it matter if I came across the George Washington Bridge, if I came through Staten Island, if we went through the Lincoln Tunnel or the Holland Tunnel? Does it matter if we took the Garden State Parkway or the New Jersey Turnpike or local streets? And one of the people in the audience said to me, Mr. Cutler, why should it matter how you got here? All that matters is that you got here. I said, that's right. And that's my point. Is fentanyl that comes across the Canadian border somehow less lethal than fentanyl that comes across the southern border? Is fentanyl that is smuggled in a suitcase through Kennedy International Airport less lethal than fentanyl that's smuggled across the Canadian border? No. The terrorists, the criminals, the drugs, the contraband, it doesn't matter how they get here. All that matters is that they get here. You see? But yet, all we're hearing about is crisis on the southern border, right? And what's remarkable to me when you look at these huge numbers, people can be really naive and foolish, and they don't know how to think logically. Shortly after 9/11, I did an interview in a local television station in New Jersey in the dead of winter. Now, usually when I went into the major networks, and back then everybody wanted me, I was on the Today Show, ABC, lots of CNN, especially when Lou Dobbs was there, MSNBC, Fox News, they would always send a car, sometimes a limo, otherwise it would be a town car. But this little station said, look, we don't have the money to send the car. Would you mind driving? I said, no, I'll drive, because I was determined after 9/11 to reach as many of our fellow Americans as possible to wake them up about the significance of immigration law enforcement and national security and the safety of our country and our citizens. So it took a couple hours to get there. The roads were covered with ice. It was the dead of winter. It was 5 degrees outside. And I debated this young lady who was a lawyer, very pleasant, well-educated, but not thinking very deeply, apparently. And she told me that I was an immigration restrictionist. Why don't you think we should be able to let everybody come here? and I kind of laughed, and I said, you know, that reminds me of the 19-year-old beauty queen. And they ask her what her platform is with all sorts of gravitas, you know, this 19-year-old girl whose only platform are her platform shoes. And she says with a very serious face, I'm going to end world hunger. Are you going to open a soup kitchen? How do you plan to do it? Don't confuse me with that nonsense. I'm going to end world hunger. That's my platform, and I'm sticking to it. Okay. So this young lady thought I was a restrictionist because I dared to suggest that we can't allow the entire world to come to the United States, even though more than half the world's population would arguably live below the poverty line. Well, after the debate, after the program, they asked if I'd be willing to drive her home to Manhattan, and I said, sure. Yeah, the idea of trying to take a train in the middle of a 5-degree night was brutal, and I'm a fair kind of guy. And because the roads were what they were, we had to drive very slowly. It was treacherous. We had about 2 hours together in the car. And we continued the conversation. And I asked her, how many people do you think the United States can bring in successfully where it doesn't have a negative impact on our country? oh, my God, America's huge. You know how big America is, and the rolling plains of the Midwest, and on and on. I said, well, first of all, understand that we don't just need to build apartment houses. Every person who's here has an environmental footprint. They all need water and food, electricity, transportation, and so forth, as I mentioned earlier. So how many acres of land do we need to grow the crops to feed one person? Now, multiply it by millions. Same thing with water. Same thing with cattle and livestock. Although now they're telling us we should be eating insects. I guarantee they won't be eating insects, however, right? It's insanity, the way that people will fall right in line and be as stupid as possible. I always wondered how the Holocaust happened. I don't wonder anymore. Human beings have the capacity to be incredibly stupid, to be honest with you. So I asked her, do you think we could let in 10 million? She said, without a doubt. 50 million, absolutely. 100 million, no problem. 500 million. Well, wait a minute, Mr. Cutler, where are you getting these numbers from? I said, well, the world is filled with poor people. They are desperate. They will do anything to get there. They're not the enemy, necessarily, although some of them may be criminals and terrorists and so forth. But the point is, if you can't feed yourself or feed your children, your first obligation is to get food. America, well, we're the world's breadbasket. Why wouldn't they come here? She said, okay, so let's say 500 million. I said, you think we could do that? She said, it would be tough. I said, how about a billion? She said, come on, this is getting ridiculous. Of course we can't let a billion people come here. So I, you know, luckily we were at a red light. I remember turning and looking at her. I said, wait a minute. Did you just tell me that we can't let in all the aliens who want to come here? What kind of person are you? Are you a restrictionist? Are you cold-hearted? Don't you have compassion? She said, Mr. Cutler, there's no way we can bring in a billion. I said, okay. And I said, we may disagree about what the ultimate number is, but you know what you just learned? That just like people, countries have finite resources. As Clint Eastwood very intelligently said, a man's got to know his limitations, so do countries. If you agree with me that there is a limit to how many can come to America, then you're agreeing with me that we need a mechanism in place that we can close the door when the time comes. And up until now, you haven't been willing to accept that. It looks like you've just changed your mind. How's that for an argument, James?
Pretty good one. A pretty good one.
You know, she was so rattled. She was so rattled. She said, Mr. Cutler, I don't know what to say. I said, but don't you understand? Because the two most dangerous words, and you and I have talked about this off the air, the two most dangerous words that come out of academia, folks, in theory, and they hate it when you confront them with two other words called in reality. In theory, we should allow the whole world to come here. But in reality, we know that you can oversubscribe and destroy our country in the process. And that's the point. If you sit down with people and have a logical, rational conversation, I was going to teach debate on the college level. I used to argue bail for the U.S. attorneys. Normally, agents didn't do that. That was the job of the prosecutors, but they liked me to do it because nobody got bail. Okay? But that's how you do it. If you're willing to tell me that we can't let in a billion people, you just became a restrictionist. The only difference between you and me is we have a disagreement about the ultimate number. That's the only thing that separates us. And I'm telling you, this young lady was rattled to the core. And she said to me as she got out of the car, I don't even know what to say to answer what you said to me. You've rearranged all of my thinking. Now, this woman was firmly entrenched on the open border side. And you know where we're seeing that today? In New York City. Do you know where we're seeing that today? In Chicago. Do you know where we're seeing that today? In San Francisco. Why? Well, they have sanctuary policies, come one, come all. Well, they see what it now looks like, come one, come all. And they're saying, wait a minute, we can't deal with this. Well, be careful what you wish for. You just got it. And now suddenly, Eric Adams, the brilliant mayor of New York, is starting to sound like what? A restrictionist. Oh, my God, could it be? You see where this is all going, folks? They've had their time to play this little experiment like little children because they look at the world from a theoretical perspective. Because in universities, we talk about in theory. when you meet the ground, where the rubber meets the road is where reality lives. I was told by members of Congress, when I asked them why they wanted me so frequently to go to those hearings in Washington, they said this to me, and I heard this from several members of Congress and staffers and lawyers on the Hill. They said, Mr. Cutler, we have some of the best legal minds here in Washington. They know how to write laws, although very often they would ask me to help the wording in laws also because of issues. But they said, we understand the law better than probably anyone else, especially where immigration is concerned. Let's realize how many immigration lawyers are in Congress, by the way, both sides of the aisle. So they want open borders too. You know why? Because the people coming across the border aren't migrants. They use that word, but there are American migrant workers also. They're aliens, okay? But if they don't want to use the word alien, I recommend a different term, and it's not migrants. They are clients. They are clients to immigration law firms. They are clients to these NGOs, non-government organizations, that laughably are referred to as nonprofits, even as they get hundreds of millions of dollars in contracts. Nonprofit, my tail. Okay? So they said to me, we understand how to write law. That's our thing. That's our profession. That's our full-time job. But they said, you're the guy that provides the reality check. Are the laws enforceable? What are the unintended consequences of the laws that we pass? And I was an integral part of that process. It wasn't just about, you know, sitting at a hearing and running my mouth. And I was always very careful, by the way, that if I didn't have the answer to a question, I'd say, I don't know. I was raised that way by my parents. If I ran my mouth at the dinner table, boy, oh boy, I caught hell from my parents because my dad used to look me in the eye and say, Mike, empty barrels make a lot of noise, which was his very nice way of telling me to zip it if I didn't have articulable evidence or proof to back up what I was saying. Great advice for everybody and anybody. But the point of the matter is that up until now, we've been suffering the consequences of theory. Theory, we shouldn't put anybody in jail because the people that come out of jail are worse off than when they went in, and very often they are. We call prisons correctional facilities, and boy, oh boy, that's an overly optimistic assessment of what they do in jails. But maybe instead of looking at what happens when we put a 20-year-old behind bars, we ought to figure out what we're doing with a 20-day-old child that causes him to go down the wrong road so that by the time he's 20, he's sitting in a jail cell. Nobody wants to talk about that either. They don't want to talk about crime in these neighborhoods, hopelessness in the neighborhoods, the lack of quality education that means that people are adults but they don't have any way of really supporting themselves. This is all about preparing American kids to become successful, happy, and productive adults. And nobody would even think that anymore when you look at the curriculum, because the schools are being used as training grounds for brainwash. Hate America. I'm trying to remember the name of that young lady who was exchanged in Russia to the arms dealer.
And Brittany Griner.
Yes.
Brittany Griner. Yeah.
When she played her first game, and she heard the national anthem, she had a very different feeling about it than she did before she was stuck in Russia. What's the song? You don't know what you got till it's gone, right? They took paradise and made it a parking lot. See, it's easy to say, let's get rid of America. My mother used to say to me, you don't throw away dirty water so you have clean water. We're always trying to make America better. That's what the Founding Fathers said, didn't they? In order to make a more perfect union? But to simply say we're going to blow up America and then we'll figure it out afterwards, that's the prescription for a catastrophe. And you know, I pay attention to words, my degree again in communications. They started out this nonsense of saying that it was a good thing when stuff was disruptive. You know, the John Smith Company is a disruptive company. It's disrupting the industry. Disruption is not good. It's one thing to say revolutionary, game changer, whatever. Innovative, but they were preparing Americans for the notion that disruptions are positive, like when there's a disruption in electric power, or a disruption in water, or a disruption in the food chain. Are these good? No. But they were priming the pump and conditioning American people to the notion, I believe, that disruptions are wonderful. Baloney. We need to have the guts to confront people. And when someone gives you this nonsense about children and sex change and fluidity of sex, no. we've got to stand up and say, you people are nuts. You're crazy. And you're going to do irreparable damage to these children. They're going to grow up completely screwed up, which is what the goal is. Because if you screw up the next generation of Americans, China, Russia, and Iran will just walk in here and take over. And I promise you, for those young boys who can't figure out how to use a urinal, forgive me for being a little bit off color, they will show them how, what the solution is. Either they'll be in a re-education camp like the Uyghurs, or they'll just shoot them. These are brutal regimes. They don't care about human rights or civil rights. They don't care about the lives of their own citizens. You think they give a rat's tail about American lives? And we are weakening ourselves in front of our enemies that seek world domination, not to make the world a happier place, but to make the world serve their needs and their demands. You know, I don't trust anybody who seeks high public office because power is intoxicating for a certain ilk of people. Most people don't want to be presidents of companies, let alone presidents of countries. Who needs the aggravation? Most Americans, most normal people want a roof over their head, a refrigerator with food, perhaps a nice car in the driveway with a tank of gas, a couple of nice suits in the closet, and they're happy. Enough money for a vacation, enough money to have their children educated properly. That's what the average person wants. They don't need 15 airplanes, 18 mansions. No. They just want a secure future where they're safe, their children are safe, and their kids can grow up happy and pursue their dreams. And I don't think I'm saying something strange or something that most people would disagree with. And I don't care if you identify as a Democrat, Republican, or a member of the Hopping Kangaroo Party. That's what most people want, to live in safety and to have a life for their children that's better than the life they lived. That's it. And yet you have a certain group, like Lurch, you know, Kerry, who wants to run around and tell people how to live their lives. Now he's going after the farms. And, you know, I realized something, James. All of these people with the mega bucks and these political aspirations, you know, the Hillarys of the world, are the most miserable human beings you're ever going to meet. They are doing this to fill a void. Either they were abused by their parents. I find it interesting that Bernie Sanders will never talk about his childhood. Most politicians, most people love to talk about their childhood. I have very fond memories of my childhood and my parents, and I miss them terribly, even though they're gone a half century or more. Bernie Sanders, when he was questioned on a television show I watched, I asked him about his parents. He said, we're not going to talk about my youth. And he was angry. And I think you see that with a lot of these politicians. They are trying to fill a void. And I think most of these characters are people that probably when their friends were playing hide and seek, they would hide, but nobody would look for them.
Nobody come find them.
Yeah. Right?
But
while you're ahead, don't look for him. Thank God he's not here. Right?
There is a misery index, and you're absolutely right. And these people try to inflict as much as misery as they can on the American people for no other reason
yep.
than it makes them feel good.
Alejandro Mayorkas. I had a limo driver drive me into the studio one day, and he told me he used to work for Leona Helmsley. Those of you that remember her, the little people pay taxes. She owned the Empire State Building and all these other buildings. And she was the Wicked Witch of the West, right? And I couldn't believe what she came out and said. I don't pay taxes. The little people pay the little people. So he told me one day he was working in the kitchen in this restaurant that was in one of the hotels that she and her husband owned. And she came in stamping her feet. She was like a rabid animal, as he put it. And she said, I am having a lousy, miserable, damn day. And someone else is going to have a miserable day. So maybe I'll feel better. I'm firing four of you or five of you. And she just walked up to these people in the kitchen. They were standing there with their mouths hanging open. You're fired. You're fired. You're fired. You over there in the corner. You can't hide from me. You're definitely fired. And the other one in the back, you're fired. Now get the hell out of here. Well, wait a minute, Ms. Helmsley, what do we do? You didn't do anything. I just don't like you. I'm having a terrible day, and so are you now. Ha, ha, ha. And she went storming out, and they were fired. They lost their jobs. What was the offense? She was pissed. I'm pissed. You're going to suffer. This is sickness. And that's why I do not trust people who seek higher office. This is the reason that I am a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. Now, I don't think that that means that you can have an anti-aircraft gun on the roof of your house, and some people will disagree with me. And by the way, as Americans, we should have those conversations. I love them. Debate is so important. And what bothers me is increasingly, especially in law schools, there's no debate. Judges are showing up in law schools at some of the most prestigious universities, and if the judge is a conservative, they're shouted down and they have to call for security. Now, these people are going to be lawyers. They're going to be judges. They're going to be professors. Law is all about debate. I was going to teach debate on the college level. Debate, think about this, is truly intellectual capitalism. You bring your argument to the marketplace of the debate stage. Your opponent brings his or her arguments on the other side of it. And then the consumers, the audience, and the judges decide what they want to buy, right? It's intellectual capitalism. It's normal. That's why we say certain things. Think about some of the expressions that we use, which encourages discussion, debate, and discourse, right? Two heads work better than one. Have you ever heard that expression, James?
Absolutely, I have.
And what does it mean?
Well, it means that cooperation oftentimes is what makes it happen. A give
right,
and take, an exchange of ideas.
From one angle, I'm going to look at it from another angle, and then we're going to figure it out because there's two different viewpoints. Maybe there's three different ways to do something. They don't want that now. We're going to tell you the way it is, and you're going to follow the science. Well, wait a minute. We're going to follow the science? Sex is fluid? Isn't sex determined by the genetic makeup of the animal? Two X chromosomes, guess what you got? A female. An X and Y, guess what you got? A male. That's following the science. Oops. But they say these things, and if you analyze it and you bring it down that way, they have nowhere to go. So what they then do is they get angry because you shot down their arguments, and they don't know how to deal with loss because they grew up in the schoolyard where everybody got a certificate of participation and nobody lost. So now when they lose, they get crazy. And they look for their comfort puppy because, oh, my God, and you should have told me in advance of telling me that because I needed a trigger warning that you were going to disagree with me. Trigger warning. The only trigger warning that I could have imagined was Roy Rogers when his horse relieved himself. Remember his horse was Trigger?
Yeah.
How am I doing?
You're killing it tonight. I want to ask you a question. Before we get too far afield here, and we got about 45 minutes left, you and I had talked about this the last time we, huh?
Could that possibly?
I know it's run like the wind tonight, just like it always does. You know, when we talked last week when we were setting this up, and you know, we were talking about Alejandro Mayorkas, and
yes,
I watched this guy. I see him testify. And have you noticed, and a lot of these guys do this, Barack Obama does the same thing, Mayorkas does the same thing, Benito Mussolini did the same thing. You notice how they stick their chin up and
yes.
and they look down on everybody. And that
yes.
is just the most elitist, off-putting thing. And I don't like the guy anyway because he sits there and, you know, God bless him. And a lot of this is theater, and you and I both know that. It's like...
Mm-hmm.
professional wrestling. But, you know, a lot of these guys, and God bless them, some of them are really trying to get to the truth. And we all know what the truth is. You and I have talked about it forever, and you've made this point, and as long as I've known you, you've never deviated from it, and there's no way to argue against it.
Right.
Anybody that says this immigration system is broken has no idea what they're talking about. It's working just exactly the way they want it to, and this Mayorkas character sits in front of these guys that are trying to get to the truth and looks them dead in the eye that the border's under control. We don't have any problems. And we, you know, we can look in real time to the stampede, the human, it's a humanitarian crisis. And that's not an exaggeration. That's not hyperbole.
No, 85,000 children are missing. And if you start,
we have no idea where they're at.
60 Minutes did a story about these kids being worked in these meatpacking plants at age 14, and they're being exposed to dangerous acids that are required to clean the machinery after they slaughter the animals. Okay, 14 years old. But they talked about labor. They didn't talk about immigration or what country these kids came from. And they only showed a couple of hundred. We know that right now there are at least 85,000 missing children in America.
They have no idea. No idea where they're at.
And they will never be reunited with their families.
No.
And we don't know where.
And it's hard to say how many of them are dead.
Sexually trafficked. Right. And increasingly you're seeing all these connections to Epstein, which brings us back to how perverse these people are.
Yeah.
How perverse do you need to be to be wanting to engage in sex with underage girls? I mean, I was a single guy for a bunch of years. I was happy. I dated women. They were women. They were my age, give or take a couple of years. Here you have these super powerful people, political leaders and so forth, doing what? Engaging in sex with teenage girls who are underage. Why? Because there's nothing else that they can do, because it's kind of like if you're exposed to alcohol enough, you need to drink more in order for it to have an effect. If you're taking drugs, you need to increase the dose, because after a while, the original dose doesn't give you that feeling that you're looking for. These are twisted people who have to keep on amping it up because they don't know what else to do. They are not decent. They're not compassionate. They don't look at that young girl that they might have engaged in sex with. Think about this. And
it's
think, gee whiz, what is going to happen to this girl when she grows up? How will this impact how she has relationships, if she can have relationships and get married and have children one day? You're screwing them up permanently. They don't care. They
no, because nobody's going to tell them no.
All they care about is themselves. Am I right or wrong, James?
No. Who tells these people no? They can do whatever the hell they want to whomever they want, practically. And no one says anything. Yeah. And no one's going to say a thing.
No.
You and I can sit here and... Yeah, go ahead.
No. And so I look at Mayorkas and his lies, but we knew Mayorkas was a problem child to begin with because he ran Citizenship and Immigration Services under the Obama administration. And I want to just talk briefly about this because this is really important. You know, the usual joke when you talked about building the border wall, the people that opposed the wall, and these were the Republicans. Remember, when the Republicans had control of both houses, they didn't give Trump the money for the wall either, folks. Please don't tell me the solution is to vote for the vote the Dems out. The Democrats are a nightmare. But the Republicans aren't much better. Let's be very honest. Okay, they started this whole thing about cheap labor. And they didn't want cheap labor. Let's be real honest here. The Republicans did not simply want cheap labor. That would have been okay, almost sort of. What they wanted was to cheapen labor. And Greenspan articulated it perfectly when he said, if you make Americans compete with foreign workers, you will drive down the wages. Drive down the wages. So if you import an army of third world workers, then the norm for American workers becomes conditions and wages that you associate with what? The third world. That's how you turn America into a third world country. Okay? Again, lacking compassion. I have had these discussions with Republicans, and we talk about $15 an hour for fast food workers. Oh, my God, how much more should I pay for hamburger? Now, the person saying it to me has a brand-new Cadillac Escalade parked outside. And I said, can you live on $15 an hour? Not my problem. If they can't live on it, let them get a different damn job. Well, wait a moment. Some of these people, oh, this is a child's job. I have traveled around this country, folks, and I cannot begin to tell you how many times I pulled into the drive-thru, and the person handing me my bag was a person in their 40s or 50s, and I would say to them, oh, how are you doing? Great. How did you wind up here? Well, I'm a computer programmer, but some guy from India took my job, and this is the only job I could take. There was a wonderful, well, not really wonderful, but it was a well-done documentary by Dan Rather, of all people, called No Thanks for Everything. Go out and check it out, folks. No Thanks for Everything. He did an interview and an analysis of, I believe it was four people who had master's degrees in computer programming, MBAs and masters of science. And my first wife, my late wife, had her MBA in computer science. She was a Phi Beta Kappa graduate, belonged to National Math Honor Society. I had a big fight with Bob Goodlatte over this. I said, the people like my first wife, may she rest in peace, are losing their jobs to people from India. I said, you don't seem to understand. He said, well, my son knows lots about computers. I didn't even know anything about his son, but being an idiot politician, forgive the redundancy, and he was chairman at the time of the House Judiciary Committee, which in part oversees immigration, said to me, my son would love to see thousands and thousands and thousands and even more thousands of brilliant Indian programmers come to America. And I said, what are the American programmers? Chopped liver. Most of them are brighter, smarter, and more effective, and they've been on the job for decades, and they know how their respective companies want things done. They have institutional knowledge that these people coming in from India will never acquire. And that was the end of the conversation. And by the way, Goodlatte is an immigration lawyer who specialized in, you guessed it, H-1B visas. There's a conflict of interest. Zoe Lofgren, who chairs the House Immigration Subcommittee, is an immigration lawyer. Played a major role in the American Immigration Lawyers Association. You see? So they're feathering their nests, both sides of the aisle. So we're going to flood America with all these workers to do what? Drive down wages. They want to cheapen labor so they can get more money. In the 50s, the average CEO probably made 40 to 50 times what his average worker earned, and everybody was happy. Today, the average CEO makes over 600 times what their average worker earns. And they have golden parachutes, and they're given cars and houses and the use of jet planes, and like they're royalty. They're being paid a big multiple over what the president of the United States earns. And you tell me who has a more serious job. I remember the president of Japan Airlines saying that he actually made less money than his pilots. He was interviewed, I think, on 60 Minutes years ago, and they said, why would you be making less money than your pilots? He said, I fly a desk. They fly an $80 million airplane, and it has 400 people sitting behind them. Whose job has greater responsibility? Shouldn't they be paid by that for that responsibility? What a brilliant idea. So, again, more. You destroy the middle class. In fact, Robert Kennedy Jr., I don't know what his middle initial is, was talking about the death of the middle class, and I've been writing about it forever. We have engineered the middle class into oblivion. And what does that do? It pushes all of America to the left, because most Americans need money from the federal government so they can turn on the lights when they come home from work or buy a hamburger at McDonald's. The party of the handout is the Democrats. So what does that mean? It means more and more Americans are going to vote for Democrats because the Democrats are offering them the handouts that the Republicans would never give them. So what the Republicans don't seem to understand that they're trying to saw a log off of a tree, but they're sitting on the wrong side of the branch. Look, I don't think a guy that works at a hamburger joint should be making what a neurosurgeon makes. That's communism, and that's crazy. But when you could look me in the eye, and you're doing well, and you say to me, $15 an hour is more than enough. Folks, in New York City, you can't support a dog on $15 an hour or $30,000 a year, which is what it works out to. Instead of saying all Americans need to do well, we're in this together. That's not what we're hearing. We hear Republicans say stupid things like, oh, those bleeding heart liberals. Well, wait a moment. What do you mean bleeding heart? You mean if someone's compassionate, they're foolish? Who do you want for a friend, a cold-hearted SOB? Or somebody who's compassionate and is concerned about their fellow neighbors and their fellow Americans? My friends are all compassionate, or they're not my friends. The problem is that we're not applying compassion to our fellow Americans. That's the problem. That's the problem. You feed your own children before you give money to charity. You don't put your kids to bed hungry at night and then mail a check out to charity. If you have enough money, you certainly should give to charity. But if you can't feed your own children and you can't buy them a new winter coat in the dead of winter, maybe you shouldn't be giving money to charity. Am I crazy, James?
No, not a bit. Not a bit.
And then we get to Mayorkas. Now, so everyone used to say, if you put up a 20-foot wall, they'll come with a 25-foot ladder. Ha, 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 that was the punchline. Or they'll dig under the wall. You don't need to do any of that, folks. You want to get past the wall on the border? I could put something in the pocket of an alien that weighs less than an ounce, and it fits in their pocket, and they walk right through that wall as though it was not there. It's a green card. It's a U.S. passport. It's an advanced parole document, all of which are issued by Citizenship and Immigration Services, which was Mayorkas's agency, and he demanded that his people approved all of the petitions that landed on their desks, even when the FBI came to him and said, this company that's filed for these treaty investor visas, these EB-5, have a connection to Hezbollah. You're probably going to wind up giving terrorists visas. Don't do it. And he basically told the FBI to go to hell, and he went and did it anyway. And he was rewarded. The Office of Inspector General did an investigation and found clear malfeasance. ABC News back then, did a multi-part series about all of the corruption and how Chuck Grassley called out Mayorkas back then for his corrupt and incompetent practices as the head of Citizenship and Immigration Services. You know, when our guys took out Bin Laden, they found in his library, among other things, a copy of the 9/11 Commission report and an application for a U.S. passport. We've had lots of terrorists acquire U.S. passports. The Tsarnaev brothers who attacked the Boston Marathon, for example, had green cards. They had been granted political asylum, and one of the brothers had U.S. citizenship. The other was applying for it at the time of the attack. Faisal Shahzad, the Times Square bomber in 2010, had become a U.S. citizen less than a year before the terror attack. If you become a U.S. citizen, you get a U.S. passport. If you keep your original passport from your home country, you can now travel around the world on two passports. By alternating passports, you cover your tracks. And you gain access to countries that otherwise wouldn't let you in because an alien who becomes a naturalized citizen can change their name, and their U.S. passport only reflects their new name. They essentially put themselves in their own witness protection program. I raised that issue in at least one of the hearings where I testified, and to my knowledge, they've still done nothing to close that loophole that has the potential to get lots of people killed, both in the United States and in countries around the world. That's how serious this is. We're not hearing anything about how we're going to grant people citizenship, political asylum, and they want it, politicians on both sides want comprehensive reform, which would take an overwhelmed system and require that they give these documents to people so they can travel around the world on assumed identities. In fact, the 9/11 Commission staff report also said this: abuse of the immigration system and a lack of interior immigration enforcement were unwittingly working together to support terrorist activity. Think about that. Then on page 61, exploring the link between human smugglers and terrorists. Why is nobody from the Republican Party digging this out? This is public information, folks. Are they lazy or stupid or corrupt? Which is it? They have a choice. So page 61 begins by saying, exploring the link between human smugglers and terrorists. In July 2001, the CIA warned of a possible link between human smugglers and terrorist groups, including Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Egyptian Islamic Jihad. Indeed, there's evidence to suggest that since 1999, human smugglers have facilitated the travel of terrorists associated with more than a dozen extremist groups. With their global reach and connections to fraudulent document vendors and corrupt government officials, human smugglers clearly have the, quote, credentials necessary to aid terrorist travel. And then we get to this. Now, what they have done is to so overwhelm the system, they meaning Biden, that they are admitting aliens into the United States even without paperwork, and I want to know how that isn't considered human trafficking, and in fact, the judges said they're not allowed to do that. They're using parole also, which is a compassionate program, as a way of justifying releasing millions of aliens into the United States, just like they did with DACA. That was another compassionate program. As an aside, before I read this paragraph, when I was interviewed for my job with the INS, it was like a five-hour interview. I walked out of there thinking that my head had been shrunk. And they wanted to know, are you a compassionate kind of a guy? They wanted you to err on the side of compassion. That was pretty clear. And they said to me, Mr. Cutler, let's say you're an inspector at a port of entry, and a woman comes in accompanied by a doctor, and they tell you that she has to have life-saving surgery at a hospital nearby. But you look her up in the book, which is a book of excludable aliens, and you find that she was previously deported from the United States. So you have a problem. If you turn her away, she undoubtedly will be dead within 48 hours. If you let her in, there's an excellent chance they can save her life. What do you do? And I said, well, I think the thing to do is let her in and have an agent accompany her, make sure she doesn't abscond, and when she's well enough to travel, have her go back to her home country. And they said to me, that's very good. They said, by the way, there is a process. We can parole her into the country. Legally, when you're paroled, you're not admitted. So an alien who's paroled into the United States has no lawful right to stay here. Legally, it makes things easier to move them out. But they're still physically here. You know. And it took a while for my brain to wrap around the concept. How can you be here without being here? Well, you parole them in. So legally, they're not here. But physically, of course, they are here. So this is a program that's used to permit people into the country who might otherwise be inadmissible, but for humanitarian purposes. So the Biden administration takes this program that's designed to save lives and says, hey, we'll parole 5 million people into the United States. And we'll give them we'll allow them to apply for political asylum even though they don't qualify. I wrote an article where I said that the people that are applying for asylum won't qualify because asylum doesn't mean you live in a poor country. It simply means that because of your race, religion, ethnicity, tribal affiliation, sexual orientation, or political philosophies, you face persecution or worse in your home country. I'm Jewish. My family was decimated in the Holocaust. I'm very sensitive about the notion of political asylum. But again, it has to be because the person's life is at stake because of race, religion, ethnicity, and so forth. Okay? The people that are coming in for the most part, besides the fact that we're bringing in a fifth column of aliens from countries that want to see us destroyed, most of them are economic refugees, but there is no such thing as an economic refugee, okay? So I wrote in one of my articles for Front Page Magazine that to call these people asylum applicants, which is how the media portrays them and the Democrats portray them, oh, we've admitted all these asylum applicants. That's like saying that a homeless person who buys a lottery ticket is an aspiring millionaire. How's that for an analogy? It ain't happening. It ain't happening. But it makes it sound good, and the American people are very compassionate, very reasonable, and our compassion, our kindness is now being turned against us as a weapon, as a weapon. So now talking about the weapon of who we've let in, let's now read what on page 98 of that report under immigration benefits. Listen carefully. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, and that could well be an immigration fraud, by the way, folks, right? Achieving temporary worker status. Well, that's DACA. By the way, guess who the architect of DACA was? You guessed it. Alejandro Mayorkas, achieving temporary worker status or applying for asylum after entering. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Today, folks, some of these aliens are getting court hearing dates 5 and 10 years from now to remain in the United States until the petition was adjudicated. And then it says this. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. So all these people have overwhelmed the immigration court system. They have years before they're ever going to be called, and there's no one to look for them if they don't show up. And what did the 9/11 Commission say terrorists were doing? They would apply for any kind of immigration benefit they could imagine because they knew it would give them time in the United States where they didn't have to worry about being deported so they could put together a terrorist attack. There are now 5 million such aliens, and I think the number is higher. And by the way, if we do comprehensive reform, because there's no way of knowing when the aliens came in. As I mentioned earlier, they could come in 3 weeks from tomorrow and claim they've been here for 10 years. You know, all those gotaways, we haven't identified them. All of those gotaways, and gosh only knows how many there are, because I'm sure it's happening on the northern border also, all of them will also be eligible to lie and get amnesty under comprehensive immigration reform, which is what Mayorkas is pushing. And so what it sounds like to me is they want Americans so angry about what's happening in the cities by flooding the cities with the aliens that when Biden says, okay, we'll have a compromise, the only thing they're going to compromise is national security. Because that would mean that we could wind up with 30 or 40 million aliens getting lawful status, among them criminals and fugitives from justice. You know, when they talk about the root cause of illegal immigration, it's not one issue. It's not simply they're poor people looking to mow lawns or take care of babies, okay? They might be fugitives from justice. They might be terrorists. They might be members of the drug cartels. We have no clue. We don't know who they are or why they're coming. It's not one root cause. But the biggest root cause is the fact that once they come here, this administration absolutely will do nothing against them in violation of standing law, in violation of the Constitution, in violation of their oaths of office. Let me pull this up. I have it here. I want to give you the right citation. Bear with me one moment. Okay. Article 4, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution is the following. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion. And on application of the legislature or of the executive when the legislature cannot be convened against domestic violence. Invasion is described by the dictionary as incursion by a large number of people or things into a place or sphere of activity. Okay? Think about that. And then welcome intrusion into another's domain. Invasion. Are we not witnessing an invasion? Does the Constitution state that the states are to be protected against invasion? So Trump gets impeached twice. You have a clear violation of the Constitution and oaths of office by all of our officials. You have situations that run 180 degrees in opposition to the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. And the beat goes on. And the beat goes on. And what's really galling to me, and I want everyone to think about this, and I wrote about this in my most recent article, if a police officer in the heat of battle fires his or her weapon and kills somebody, they will be investigated 18 ways from Sunday by 28 people sitting in a conference room that has air conditioning and all the coffee and sandwiches you can drink and eat. And they will have, I don't know, a month, micromanage slices of time of less than a second, and their lives are not on the line. That police officer or that federal agent will have 3 or 4 seconds to react, knowing that if he makes the wrong decision, he or his partner or both of them may be dead. Maybe innocent bystanders will be dead. They certainly, literally, have skin in the game. And yet, these yo-yos sitting in that room could turn around and say, well, 3 shots was okay. That 4th shot, we're going to indict him. Look at the guy that was trying to save the people on the subway, right? We're going to indict him. An airline pilot like Sully, who's a hero. Remember the story Miracle on the Hudson, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If you watch the movie, the FAA did an inquest, and they did multiple simulations. They spent millions of dollars because the plane wound up getting destroyed by landing in the water, not on a runway. And now the question was, did he really need to set it down in the Hudson River? Could he have gone back to LaGuardia? Could he have gone on to Teterboro Airport? And finally, they exonerate him. But finally, they put him through hell. Okay? Why? Because as the captain of that airplane, he and his first officer are accountable, responsible. Right? If a doctor makes mistakes in the operating room, that doctor can lose his or her license, can be sued, can be criminally prosecuted. If a guy gets behind the wheel of his car and he's drunk and runs somebody down, that person's in a world of problems because they're going to go to jail, they're going to be sued, they're going to lose their license because they acted irresponsibly and criminally, right? Bus driver has an accident, same deal. Train conductor, same deal. Anybody in a position of authority will be held accountable with one notable exception, politicians. They can make decisions because they're acting under the corrupt influence of bribers that we euphemistically call campaign contributors. We have 100,000 die every year because of fentanyl. 100,000. And that doesn't include crimes committed by addicts who murder and injure people to get the money to buy the drugs, or people that drive motor vehicles under the influence, or the cartels that engage in gang warfare and kill more people. I mean, the carnage is unbelievable. I'd love to see toxicology on people that do mass shootings. I'd love to know how many of them have alcohol or chemicals flowing through their blood the way they report on a drunk driver who plows into a school bus, right? But everybody is held accountable except politicians. And what's remarkable, I'm a huge fan of Alan Dershowitz. He's one of my heroes. Alan Dershowitz spoke, in fact, at the same synagogue where my wife and I got married. And this was many years ago, because my in-laws from my first wife had been through the Holocaust, so every year they got invitations to go to the Holocaust memorial services. And they said, why don't you take our grandson and take your stepson, and because we have three tickets, and go. We'd like you to experience this, and they need to experience this. And Alan Dershowitz spoke, and he spoke for 2 hours, and I wish that he could have spoken for two more hours. I'm a huge Dershowitz fan. He's brilliant. I don't always agree with him, but that's the First Amendment. That's what being a real liberal means. And Dershowitz, of all people, quoted, because Stalin said one death is a tragedy, but a million deaths is a statistic. And he said, if you kill a person, there's a good chance the way the world is interconnected, no matter where you go, even countries that aren't friendly to America may well turn them over to you. They don't want criminals in their midst. They'll get rid of them. But if you go out there, he said, you will find that as the numbers of dead people increases, it is disproportionately related to the likelihood that the person or persons that are responsible for the carnage will be prosecuted. Think about that when you think about the 100,000 who died last year because of fentanyl overdoses. What do you think of that analogy, James?
Spot on. And nobody talks about that. Nobody talks about those 100,000 people. Nobody talks about the fact that we have scooped up enough fentanyl to kill everybody in the country. Nobody says a word about it.
Over?
And there's only one place this
how many
is coming
times
from.
Over?
Oh, who knows how
and
many.
And yet we do nothing to China. We went to war because 3,000 died on 9/11, and absolutely we needed to take action. But the fact that hundreds of thousands of people are dying between the drugs and the crime and it's crickets. Why are there no ads warning people about drugs? I finally saw one from the Ad Council 2 days ago. The ads about cigarette smoke and vaping are amazing. Click here to ticket, seatbelt, drunk driving, constantly. Nothing about drugs. You know why? Because if you took drug money out of banking, Wall Street, and real estate, they'd go belly up. Our economy is floating on drug money. And that's all that the bankers and the politicians who accept the money from the bankers give a rat's tail about. What do you think of that?
Yep, dead on it. Dead on it. They don't care. Like I said, we know this thing isn't broken. It's working the way they want it to.
Yes, it's a delivery system. And so Mayorkas, if you go back to the speech that he gave, and this blew my mind, talked glowingly about the remittances, the money being sent home by the aliens they're letting into the country who are working here. Now, I want you all to think about that. The Obama administration pumped, I don't know, I think it was a couple of trillion dollars into the economy, and they call it an economic stimulus package. And the theory was that if we put money in the hands of Americans, they will spend the money, and if they spend the money, it will generate more business. Economists call that the multiplier effect. They used to say it was a fivefold. Now they say it's threefold. I have no clue. I'm not an economist. But the idea is that if you earn a paycheck, you go out and you buy a new television, the salesman who gets the commission for selling the TV buys a pair of shoes, and the shoe salesman takes his wife out to dinner with the money that he gets, right? And the people in the restaurant, well, they take that money and whatever. So the money goes round and round and round through the economy. Money that is wired out of the United States does not have a multiplier effect. You may as well set fire to the money as far as our economy is concerned. So the head of the DHS, the Department of Homeland Surrender, or I now call the Department of Hospitality Services, how does that work for you, right? The Department of Hospitality Services is happy. He's thrilled. Think how wonderful, how much money is being sent home by all these wonderful migrants we've let in so they can support their families in their home countries. And what does that do to the U.S. economy? It kicks it in the backside. So they're even taking into account the fact that money earned by people who shouldn't be here is money that will ultimately be sent out of the United States, serves no useful purpose for our economy, but will help some third world countries, even as our economy is in the toilet, and we still can't get past the debt ceiling, and God only knows, I expect Biden to allow us to fall into default. I think that's his ultimate game, so that people won't get their paycheck, and Social Security won't come, and my pension check won't come, and the economy will crash, because I really believe, as I said in one of my earlier articles for Front Page Magazine, that for the Democrats to succeed, Americans must fail. That's my belief. That's where we are. And if you
we're at that tipping point
with your friends and neighbors, I guarantee you it will be an eye-opener.
Absolutely. I mean, it's no different. I mean, it's just another application of what Cloward and Piven talked about.
Yep.
It's just another tactic that they've tried to use to achieve that complete, that total societal breakdown that Cloward and Piven envisioned that would be necessary in order to destroy whatever this country is now and make it over in their own image.
And their own image is a totalitarian dictatorship. This isn't good news for anybody except them. They're telling you know, Marie Antoinette said, let them eat cake, and they're telling us, let them eat crickets.
I ain't going to eat no crickets.
You and me.
And I'm pretty sure you're probably not either.
Not even close. But, I mean, what are we doing, and why aren't we standing up and telling these clowns we're on to you? Why are you only focused on the southern border, bad as it is? Why aren't you talking about interior enforcement? Why aren't you talking about the 9/11 Commission report? We've been warned by the military that ISIS is 6 months away from having the capability to launch terror attacks in Europe and Asia. And this guy stands there and says, well, we don't think it could happen here. You're full of baloney, pal. In fact, the Washington Times did an article. And this is, again, stuff that will help keep you awake tonight. You won't need coffee if you need it to stay awake. This article was published September 27th, 2022. So we're talking about, what, maybe about 6 months ago, right? Give or take, 7 months ago. Here's the headline, Washington Times. FBI money request signals ongoing problems in vetting Afghan refugees. And it goes on and says this. Tucked inside Democrats' new spending bill is $15.3 million in emergency money for the FBI to investigate Afghan refugees brought to the United States during last year's chaotic airlift. Congress is pumping the money into the FBI just a month after Director Christopher A. Wray told lawmakers that the Bureau was having to conduct, quote, lots of interviews to keep track of Afghans and obliquely warned of a number of disruptions. There's that word again of activities. Lawmakers said that the money is the latest evidence of a hasty evacuation that jeopardizes American safety. Quote, the Biden administration's decision to let tens of thousands of unvetted Afghans into our country first and ask questions later has backfired, said Representative Thomas P. Tiffany, Wisconsin Republican. We warned well over a year ago that this would happen, and two inspector general reports have since confirmed those fears, but the White House refused to listen, and the horses are already out of the barn, unquote. Okay? So now, added to those tens of thousands of Afghans, we now have millions, creating a huge haystack in which some very deadly needles can hide. And when we keep getting these numbers, you know, last month we had more known terrorists show up on the border than we saw in 4 years, you know. Okay, I agree. It's worrying. But do you think every terrorist is on a terror watch list? Most of them aren't. And I guarantee you that we don't know who's among the getaways. And it only took 19 hijackers on 9/11 to carry out the deadliest terror attack in the history of the United States and created repercussions that reverberate to this very day around the entire world. So here's the question. if, God forbid, 3 weeks from now there's a loud kaboom and we find out that there's multiple kabooms, and let's say 50,000, 80,000 people are now dead, what are they going to do and what are they going to say? And who's going to go to jail? Who's going to face consequences? And I guarantee you, nothing is going to happen.
Nobody
it's
will. They'll talk about changes that they've decided to implement and that we're going to look at a completely new system, vetting our information. And it's going to be all kinds of word salad that they throw out there. All these things are going to do or that they have done in the interim. And you're right. Not one of those guys will see the inside of a courtroom, let alone a jail cell. They won't even see a booking office.
If a cop fires off the round in the middle of a firefight, he can well go to jail for the rest of his life. Think about that, folks. Think about what passes for justice today. I want to know what it is I'm saying that anybody would take issue with.
Well, nothing. I mean, if they're like-minded people as far as you and I are concerned, but take all this stuff, take every single one of these arguments that you've laid out and imagine that you just presented them to Alejandro Mayorkas. What would he say as he looks down
at
his nose at you?
Yes, absolutely. He is arrogant. He's enjoying it. He likes to know that he's revving people's motives. I guarantee that he had an abused childhood. Okay? Normal people do not do what he does. He threatened to fire people who wouldn't do as they were told, even when his orders were patently illegal. I know. I spoke to one of his administrators. I spoke to one of his administrators, and 60 Minutes was going to do the story and then backed out, believe it or not. This isn't true.
Unbelievable.
You know, I had numerous conversations with Mike Wallace, some of which lasted over an hour and a half. I'm sure that Mike is pinwheeling in his grave. I met Walter Cronkite. I didn't meet Mike Wallace. We had conversations, at least five or six. These were journalists. These were fact finders. And today, you hand the Durham report to supposed journalists, and depending on their political orientation, they'll tell you what it really means. You know, there's only one version of the truth, right? Only one version of the truth. But today, which network, were they left or were they right? Is your doctor a woke doctor? A woke doctor? I want a doctor who knows how to take care of people. And by the way, just a final comparison, I did a little digging. Johns Hopkins University Medical Center did a study back in 2018 and found that that year, something on the order of 250,000 people died of medical malpractice, 250,000. Another university put the number at 440,000. I don't know why the disparity, but okay. Has anyone called for defunding hospitals? And people buy into these dumbass arguments. What do you do with the people you can't arrest? What do you mean, what do you do with them? How does that justify giving lawful status to people who snuck into the country so we don't even know who they are or why they came here or who they're affiliated with? And you have people that will say to me, oh, it sounds reasonable. I said, if someone breaks into your house, is it reasonable to tell you that you got to prepare the guest room and find out what they'd like to have for dinner and give them a key to the front door? Well, that's different. Why? Why is that different? It isn't. We have a right to our privacy. It's the Fourth Amendment. It's been thoroughly destroyed. But the idea is you have the right to close your door and lock it and to deny entry to strangers, with the exception being law enforcement with a warrant. Other than that, you don't have to open that door for anybody, right? But we're told that if we don't throw America's doors open, metaphorically, that we're evil and we're vile and we're haters. They're putting up illegal aliens. I want you to think of this one. Here in New York City, in gymnasiums of public schools. What happens if some of these characters that are here are child molesters? Do you think that might endanger the safety of children? Do you think they care? No. We are speed bumps.
Collateral
speed
damage.
Bumps to these bumps.
Oh, yeah.
My father said that I would teach people how they should treat me by demonstrating what we're willing to accept. We need to make certain that the politicians understand that we're on to them, that we're not going to vote for them simply because they're the other party. They have to earn that vote, just as my dad said to me, I want you to respect me, not because I'm your biological father. He said, anybody can make a woman pregnant. That doesn't take much talent. He said, I hope you'll respect me for the father that I am. And my gosh, he was a man's man. If I'm 20% of who he was, my gosh, I'll be proud of myself. But he said to me, you have to earn people's respect. You have to earn people's trust. How in the world do you respect a bunch of these politicians who lie through their teeth, and everything they say is subject to question because it's a magic act? All they do is create illusions that have no bearing in reality. I think on the final note here, did I do the thing about the similarity between the two oldest professions last time or not?
You did, and we've got 4.5 minutes left. Tell people where they can find you and what you're going to be doing and where you can be heard next.
Okay. Well, they can find me in Lost and Found or the Missing Persons Bureau. No, that's not it. I had to do that. My website is Michael Cutler, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. I write for Front Page Magazine, frontpagemag.com. My most recent article, in fact, goodness gracious, I had it all queued up and I blew it. Give me a computer and I could destroy everything. Biden and
Title 42.
Information delivery system. Huh?
Yep. I was reading it. Excuse me. Oh, gosh. I was drinking some lemonade and went down the wrong pipe. I found it, too. Biden and Title 42. They were getting it to us. They were getting it from us in stereo. And it was a great article, too.
And also the one before that is worth reading. Multiple Biden calamities make the 9/11 Commission report required reading. So that's an example of the stuff I do for them. I'm constantly doing radio programs around the United States. But on Friday nights, as you pointed out, I do the Michael Cutler Hour, of course, on Blog Talk Radio, 7 p.m. East Coast time. But if you go to the if you click on my programs, you'll see the podcast. And generally what I do is an hour at the end of every week reviewing the insanity of the preceding week. And I tell you, unfortunately, there's never a shortage of material or insanity, James.
Oh, God, no. We'll never run out of things to talk about, Mike. Never.
Well, you know, the Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times.
Here we are. Yeah.
Absolutely. A lot of it created by the Chinese, in point of fact.
Well, here today, and nobody's going to say a word about it because Joe Biden and his family and Mitch McConnell and his family and just about anybody that you want to think about in Washington, D.C. is deep in their pocket.
Yes, and look at Swalwell. Explain how Congressman Swalwell,
God.
I call him Swallowwell, can still be in Congress after having had a lengthy relationship with a Chinese prostitute believed to be hooked into the Chinese Communist Party and espionage mechanism, and the FBI warned him that she got out of Dodge before anything happened.
Is that the way law enforcement is supposed to work? No, because he gave her a heads up, and they know he did, but they're not going to do anything about it.
No, the FBI gave him a heads up, and he gave her a heads up.
Right, exactly.
And I'm going to keep it clean and not say what I almost said.
Yeah. By the way, guys, I just want to tell you this. Our conversations on the telephone are almost exactly like what you're hearing on the radio, except there's a lot less profanity and dirty jokes here as there are opposed on the phone.
Well, and you know what? I've always said to people that the real words of hate, the real disgusting words, have nothing to do with bodily functions, right? It's all about words of hate that disturb me. The N-word, other words like it. We need to have respect for each other as fellow human beings, not even only as fellow Americans, but as fellow human beings. We should be respectful of each other, and life should be a team sport. Things can go very wrong very quickly with no help from anybody. Having lost my parents when I was in college as a kid, within a year of each other, I'm not the only one. You know, my dad used to say, if you could put your problems on a clothesline and then walk down the block and look at your neighbor's clotheslines, you'll probably come back to your own. And that's the point. Life is a tough proposition. And one of my favorite bumper stickers says, be kind to the people you meet. You don't know the battles they're fighting. Of course, my other favorite says, the more people I meet, the more I love my dog, but that's a story for another day.
And that's where I'm at. Michael, we're out of time. We're down to 30 seconds. Thank you so much. Once again, I am always so grateful that you're always so generous with your time. And
well, I appreciate your
information. and the information you give us in exchange for that is worth its weight in diamonds. Once again, thank you, Michael Cutler, for being with us. I know I'll be talking to you soon. God bless you, my friend. Be well. That's all the time we got, guys. We'll be taking a look at things here probably Thursday, as we do, through a conservative's perspective. God bless you. God bless America. See you then.